Thank you, Jonathan. Good evening. I thank Jorge for asking me to speak this evening, this morning, and thank you, Uncle Dave, for changing it. I appreciate that. Now, this message may not flow as well because of the time constraints. And the reason I tell you that is because you're going to say, after I'm done with it, practice what you preach. And this has been a good lesson to me, and what I'm going to speak on, it's also teaching me as I go what I'm doing wrong. Let's open up in a word of prayer. Father, we thank you for this time together. Lord, I ask for your guidance in this message. I ask that it touches someone. We just take just one little thing away tonight to now on for the week. That's what we ask, Lord. We ask for safe travel when we leave. In your name, amen. At work, we have some big trucks. And occasionally, I have to move these big trucks. I'm talking about tractor trailers that have 18-speed Eaton Fuller transmissions in them. So one day, I'm moving one of these trucks. I do have a license to do it. I was moving one of these trucks up the road, switching gears. I was thinking, you know, life is like this transmission. You start low, you end up down there somewhere in the 18th gear. But if you don't change gears at the right moment, something's just not going to be right. And so it is, I think, I've discovered, not only since marriage, but especially with kids, that if I don't start changing gears in my life and the way things are done, something's going to suffer. We are all endowed with the same 24-hour day. No matter if you're an executive or CEO of a company, or you're just one of the workers in the mailroom, the one thing you have in common with Mr. Big Shot is he does not have one more second in the day than you do. And so as I thought about changing gears, if I have to leave something to go to something else, I need to do it. I need to put the clutch in, I need to shift, I need to get onto that pattern. If I need more family time and less of this, if I need to slow things down or if I need to change my perspective, I need to do it. I need to act. Because if not, I'm going to get bogged down going up the hill, or I'm going to be on the throughway going too slow, or I'm going to be going down the hill in the wrong gear and lose that truck around a corner. In the same way as life, we can lose our perspective, we can lose control of our lives if we don't change those gears and do something about it. Now, our situation, and this message comes from our personal situation at home, we're having a great deal of difficulty getting a family devotion. Now, I work the evenings, and the mornings are busy, yada, yada, yada. We have all that stuff. But it's been really weighing on me lately that we don't have a steady family devotion and prayer time. In fact, at times that burden really can be crushing, because I'm the head of the household. I know I'm the head of the household. And yet, I haven't taken the lead. When I evaluated why this was happening, I kept on saying to myself, what do I need to add? Do I need to add that devotion period? Do I need to add this? Do I need to add to that? And as I went through this whole process, I found out I don't need to add anything. I need to subtract some things. That's what I need to do. I don't need to find anything else. I need to change gears, switch my priorities, rearrange my schedule, and get down to what I should be doing. In medicine, or I guess in science in general, and science trained, and Renee can attest to this, when a patient comes in, many times a doctor doesn't write down the diagnosis as heart attack. He'll write down, rule out heart attack. So what you do is you do all kinds of tests based on your best guess. You rule out what it couldn't be, and then you come to the conclusion that's what probably it is. Well, that's what I tried to do, and the hypothesis I'm going to test this evening is, in this hurry sick world, right now to me, hurry is my greatest enemy in my spiritual life. Hurry is my greatest enemy of my spiritual life. What is hurry sickness, as I call? Very simply, crowding too much into too little time. And if your time stays the same, because that's the way it is, then you need to rearrange what's going into that time. Because there's no way that you're going to ask for additional time. Now, this is different than being busy. Being busy means you feel in control, that you're getting the things that are done, that you have your priorities right. That's busy. But hurry is completely different. Hurry is out of control. Hurry is the fact that you don't know from one day to the next whether that day is going to go smoothly or not, because you have no time in there for anything that's going to eke out a problem. You're so crammed and tight and hurrying around that if one thing comes up. Now, what happened in this message? All right, last Monday, I was going to spend the day on the message. Monday's my day off. I'm off Sunday, Monday. And we had sickness in the family, and I got nothing done. And boy, did that derail things like crazy. That shouldn't happen. I haven't asked to speak a month ago. And something came up, and something came up, and something came up. Now, I can't rearrange the sickness in the house. But what I need to do is to have enough time in my schedule so that when something like that happens, it just doesn't completely derail me. That's the difference between busy and being hurried. Now, first of all, as I start this is not an Anthony Roberts motivational speaking message about, you know, how to eliminate that, all that. My speaker fee isn't that high. And this is not just work-related. It can be work. It can be family. It can be other commitments. It can be church. It can be expectations. Many times the expectations aren't ours. Many times those expectations are other people. And their expectations then draw us into what they want us to do, even though we shouldn't be there, we shouldn't be doing that, we can't fit it in there. Grabbing a hold of your own expectations is one of the things that we need to do, and to say no when other people's expectations don't come into sync with our own expectations. What's some signs of the hurry sick world? Like, I have to give you these. Well, here's the ones that I have. Multitasking. Driving at 70, putting on makeup. That's a problem. Doing all kinds of 2 and 3 things, and you're on the phone, and you're baking, or you're doing this, you're doing that. In one regard, if your prayer time is while you're driving to work, or you're slipping it in between, that's a problem. Now, I'm not saying that's fine if that isn't your whole prayer life. But if your whole prayer life depends on how many stop signs and red lights you have from here to work, because that's how much time you get in praying, there's a problem. You're too hurried if you haven't been able to get a prayer time in there. That kind of prayer time is not prayer time. I might be talking with God along the way. That's okay. But that's multitasking when you use it as your primary prayer time. You're taking on more things and then worrying how you're going to get it done. That's famous in our family. You answer the phone, can you do this? Yeah. How am I going to do that? Well, what do we take it on for then? Why didn't I tell the person there? No, I can't. But I don't. And another thing is lack of simplicity and clutter. Lack of satisfaction over the simple tasks versus the complex. Now, this is where I get into it at work. We have very complex things at work, and we have change motor with 4 bolts. Sometimes we're so hurried that we get into a big job with all the sophisticated computers and all that other nonsense, and you finally get it figured out, and you're so beat from being hurried that you have no satisfaction. What satisfies you? Changing the light bulb. It was quick, it was easy, it was simple. Changing the motor, 4 bolts back in, it's operating. Simple, quick, and easy. Now, of course, I can't predict what's going to break at work, but I can tell you that even in a situation of hurry, at work, it drains you. You don't get the satisfaction. What are some of the results? Well, you can get some shallow relationships. You can certainly get very shallow as far as intimacy with God. If you're doing more, not studying or praying less, your intimacy, your relationship is going to be poor. The statement, one of the things I came across reading an article on a long time ago, is our relationship a mile wide but an inch deep? Do we do lots of things but only just a little because we have so much to do that they're very superficial? Wouldn't it be better to have an inch wide but very, very deep, doing two or three things to your fullest? Doing two or three things that you're really committed to. And if you can't commit to the other things, that's fine. Overcommitment, being a mile wide and an inch deep, is a problem. That's one thing you gotta look at. Second thing, lack of sleep. Plain good old fatigue. I was reading statistics. Electricity has really messed up our sleep. You know that? We used to get 9.5 hours before Thomas Edison came along. Now, I'm sure when he invented the light bulb, he didn't want to mess up anybody's sleep, but that's what he did. Because with electricity and the light bulb, we're down to 6 hours, maybe 5 hours, maybe. Now, I don't know how your family is, but I can tell when my girls are tired. I can tell when I am tired. You're impatient. Your spouse, you're snippety with. Those are true things that if you get overdone in this world and you get tired, you really aren't effective for anybody, especially God, because that's going to go to the back burner. You're going to make it through work and you're going to drop. You're not going to have any time for God. Another thing that I found is loss of perspective. You lose a balance. You lose the ability to see things that they really are instead of a distorted manner. You sweat the small stuff, for instance. You're so overwhelmed that you go on overload and you worry about all the details. You don't get the big picture. You lose the perspective on really what you're trying to do until something jolts you back into it. At work a number of years ago, we had a guy who worked like crazy. 60, 70 hours a week. Didn't know if he needed to do it, but he was always there. And then unfortunately, his wife, who was pregnant with her first child, died in a vicious auto accident. Lori and I went to their funeral, down to the viewing. Talk about jolting somebody into reality. Talk about all of a sudden getting the big picture, about getting your perspective. Very difficult way to do it. I just hope that I can gain perspective before something like that would happen. And if it does happen, it wasn't because I lost my perspective. Workaholic is another symptom. Dissatisfaction, ungratefulness, not relying on God to provide, frustration. Typical is the people who buy such a beautiful car. They work really hard and they get their dream car, the Corvette. And the only time they drive it is back and forth to work. Because that's the only time they have time to drive. Well, what is the sense? You might as well take the bus. That's a sign and a symptom of being too busy. Judgment gets impaired. You make rash decisions just because you want to get them done with, because you have too much to do. A survey by police union, state union of the state police for the country, looked into road rage. And they found that road rage, the number one cause, is not some clown who's just a clown. Many times it's caused by someone who is so hurried and so busy and so under pressure that when somebody cuts them off in the road, when they're going to work because they're late, or when they're doing something because they got so many things stacked up, they snap. That's really unfortunate. There is another symptom. Anxiety and worry in relation to working and your provision. Matthew, well, let's turn to Matthew 6:25-27. We're so worried about working and providing, and I'm famous for this one. I'm so worried about working and providing for the family, and I forget really who's providing this. Ultimately, in the end. Okay, Matthew 6, 25 to 27. Therefore I say unto you, take no thought for your life, what ye shall eat, what ye shall drink, nor yet for your body, what ye shall put in it. It is not the life more than meat, and the body the remnant. Behold the fowls of the air, for they sow not, neither do they reap, nor gather into barns, yet your heavenly Father feedeth them. Are ye not much better than they? Which of you, by taking thought, can add one cubit unto his stature? In other words, which of you, by worrying, could add one second to your life? I'm a famous worrier for getting my hours in. When I come home on Saturday, the end of the week, I'll tell Lori the hour total. It's just a sign of not trusting God to know how many hours I had, that'll be sufficient. Matthew 11, 28 and 29, Matthew 11, 28 to 30. Matthew 11, 28 to 30. Come unto me, all ye that are labor and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn of me. For I am meek and lowly in heart, and ye shall find rest unto your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. The Bible is telling us that we don't need to have busy lives, hurry sick lives. The Bible, well in advance of this crazy society that we had, warned us and told us chill out, to relax. God will take care of it if you entrust him with it. Another portion let's look at is Luke 10, verses 38 to 42. This is one well known to everyone. Just to prove my point that God knew all about this society that was coming up. And I guess this society and busyness is worse than it was before. But still, they were busy then. Luke 10, 38 to 42. It's Mary and Martha's story. Now it came to pass, as they went, that he entered into a certain village, and a certain woman named Martha received him into her house. She had a sister called Mary, which also sat at Jesus' feet and heard his word. But Martha was cumbered about much serving, and came to him and said, Lord, dost thou not care that my sister hath left me to serve alone? Bid her, therefore, that she help me. And Jesus answered and said unto her, Martha, Martha, thou art careful and troubled about many things. But one thing is needful, and Mary hath chosen that good part, which shall not be taken away from her. Now, if that doesn't just hit the nail on the head, we have Mary's and we have Martha's. You need to decide which one you are. I know which one I can be. I can be a Martha. I can be so busy, so hurry sick, that I lose perspective of really what's important. Now, some of this road down this path was when Uncle Dave gave a message a number of months ago about be still and know that I am God. Psalm 46:10. And it inspired me at that moment to start looking into that. And over the months, I've arrived at this hurry business. So what do you do about it? The cure for busyness is not laziness. We don't have to throw everything off and say, forget it, I'm just sitting home. That wasn't the intention of God. We have to work for our bread. But there is a cure for going over that limit to the hurriness. You know, I look at the mess that we have in secular society, and what comes to mind as of late was the Erie County budget fiasco debacle that we have to deal with. And I was listening on the radio to, appears to be one of the only legislatures that has any brains whatsoever, and Arlene Cusack seems to be a pretty sharp lady. And what she said was, they called her a hypocrite because she didn't vote for the tax increase. And again, I don't want to get off on this too much here, but she didn't. But it's a good point. She didn't vote for the tax increase, but then when the tax cuts came, she didn't vote for those either, and they called her a hypocrite. And what she said was, you know, in the end, the reason this is such a debacle is because we hurried through it. Because these documents were made at the last minute. They were thrown at them the last minute. Cuts across the board. So now Ray's got to pass out a slip on where to have the picnic because the legislature just slashed things because they were in a hurry. Secular society is in a hurry and it has devastating consequences, which apparently is going to unless somebody changes it. But we can also have too much hurry in our spirituality or lack thereof. How do you cure it? Well, I think what you do is you look at Jesus as our example. You look to the Bible. What did Jesus do when he was under a lot of pressure? Let's face it, he was in demand. He was also human. He was perfect, true. He was God, true. But he was also human. The Bible tells us very clearly that he experienced everything human, from exhaustion to hunger to thirst to temptation. So let's look at what he's done and how he dealt with some of this hurry, 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 and how he slowed things down so he could keep his ministry going and keep his human side going too. John 17:14. Let's look at verse 4. John 17:4. It's a prayer of intercession just before the night that he was taken away and he died. I have glorified thee on the earth. I have finished the work which thou gavest me to do. As I was researching this out, thinking to myself, you know, how Jesus right there said that his work is basically done. But you know how many people were out there that had to be healed? How many problems there had to be solved? If you look at that ministry, he was nowhere close to being done. But Jesus knew his purpose. Jesus knew what he came for, what he had to do. And even though other people didn't think it was finished, he knew when it was finished. The question I have to ask myself is, do I know my purpose? Do I know what I should commit to, what I should be involved in, and what I have to let go so I'm not as hurry sick? Jesus combated what would have been pressure to a human to stay around and evade the Romans. But he knew he had to die. That was his appointed task. And regardless of the fact that he was too hurried and busy, he let that go and he did it. Jesus never got frazzled. Let's look at Mark 2:1-12. Mark 2:1-12. And again he entered into Capernaum after some days, and it was noise that he was in the house. And straightway many were gathered together, insomuch that there was no room to receive them. No, not so much as about the door, and he preached the word unto them. And they came unto him, bringing one sick of palsy, which was borne of four men carrying him. And when they could not come into nigh unto him for the press, they uncovered the roof where he was. When they had broken it up, they let down the bed wherein the sick of the palsy lay. When Jesus saw their faith, he said unto the sick of the palsy, Son, thy sins be forgiven. But there were certain of the scribes sitting there, reasoning in their hearts, Why doeth this man thus speak blasphemies? Who can forgive sins but God only? And immediately when Jesus perceived in his spirit that they so reasoned within themselves, he said unto them, Why reason ye these things in your hearts? Whether it is easier to say to the sick of the palsy, Thy sins be forgiven thee, or to say, Arise, take up thy bed and walk. But that ye may know that the Son of Man hath power on earth to forgive sins, he saith to the sick of the palsy, I say unto thee, Arise, and take up thy bed, and go into thine house. And immediately he arose, took up the bed, and went forth before all of them, insomuch as that they were all amazed and glorified God, saying, He never saw it on this fashion. Now, in this passage, I'm not looking at the faith, I'm not looking at the Pharisees, but I'm looking at the fact that right now, if something came through the ceiling on me, I'd be a little frazzled. Somebody started lowering something down. Yet Jesus, because he's got a purpose, because he's centered on it, because he's not too busy, he didn't get frazzled at all. The man was came down. He saw the next step was to heal him. He did so, and then he rebuked the others that didn't have faith. Now Jesus has seized the moments on many occasions and didn't worry about time. Samaritan woman at the well in John 4. He sat there and he talked to her. He didn't say, well, give me that drink, and then they had the discussion. And he said, well, please make this quick because I have a healing at 10. I have to meet with the disciples at noon. We got all kinds of things to do. He sees that moment. The reason he did is because of the way Jesus operated, the example he's giving us, is that he wasn't in a hurry sick world and practicing that. He took those moments. He knew his purpose. He was focused on things. He didn't worry about the next thing that was coming. He worried about the thing that happened right in front of him. Zacchaeus is another one in Luke 19. And that, not only did he say come down from the tree, but he also went to his house. Now somebody stops us out here after Sunday, or somebody stops us at work, said, well, hey, why don't you come on over for dinner, a cup of coffee, or this or that. How many would really have the time to do it? Seriously have the time to say, okay. I don't. I wouldn't. That's what I need to work on. Jesus left a margin in his life. He left a margin for error. He left time. He left time in his schedule. He left time in what he did so that when opportunities came up, he had the time to do it. In our world, we fill ourselves so much with so many activities, calendars that are plastered with ink, but we have absolutely no time for anything. And if somebody did happen to come and say, hey, why don't you come on down to do this, or why don't you come on to do that? I'll check the calendar first. Oh, we're too busy. Oh, maybe I can make it on this. That's how ours is. Keeping a simple life, I'm looking at as being one of the primary things that I need to start with. And you have that statement, KISS, you know, keep it simple. At work, we try to keep it simple. Invariably, it doesn't. At home, we're trying to simplify by spraying things out, getting rid of junk, taking Uncle Dave's junk, sorting through it for him, using the good stuff. And he's got a lot of good stuff. We don't mind your stuff of Uncle Dave at all. They got some good stuff for the craft cabin and all that. But simplifying our lives. All right, well, biblically, why should we be simple? So I thought this one through. Salvation is the key to this. If you think about it, salvation could be anything that God wanted it to be. Anybody over 6 foot was saved. Anybody with blonde hair is saved. Anybody who could stand on their head and spit nickels is saved. Anybody who had a degree could be saved. Why couldn't he have done that? He's God. He can do what he wants. But he didn't complicate matters, because then you get the matters of, well, is it fair, and is it this, and is it that? God obviously saw all this coming, so he picked the perfect plan, which is the simple plan. Believe in the Lord Jesus Christ, and thou shalt be saved. Now, if salvation for eternity is so simple, then why can't I at least simplify my life down here? Just a bit. So that I have more time for God. That's the question that I'm pounding myself with. Am I so hurry sick that God made salvation so simple for me, yet I can't make my life so simple to try to get more in touch with Him? Seems like I'm kind of letting my end of the bargain down. Another thing that we can do is to get more sleep. Yeah, right, huh? It's getting better in our house, by the way, from Thanksgiving. Kids are sleeping a little bit better. But that's a difficult one. That's a really difficult one. And I bring that up more as just my viewpoint, is when people are sleep-deprived, they're not as sharp as when they aren't, when they have a full night's sleep. But also sleep should not only be just rest in terms of falling asleep, but sleep really, if you think about it, is telling God, okay, God, take over the helm now, would you? I'm pretty much going to lapse into unconsciousness. I guess the question is, if you're getting enough sleep, then you're allowing God to take the helm while you rest. You're allowing Him to do some of His work while you're asleep. Maybe it'll arrange the next day. Sleep is actually, what I see is an act of relinquishment, trust to God. That He's going to take over, bring us through it, and He promises in Lamentations 3, 22, 23, let's turn there. What are His promises on that? It is of the Lord's mercies that we are not consumed, because His passions fail not. They are new every morning. Great is Thy faithfulness. We need to get to sleep. Let God take over the ship, and let Him show us His mercies in the morning, as He's promised. Fresh, renewed, ready to carry on. Don't be kept awake by guilt about yesterday or worry about tomorrow. That's what our society does. Try to sleep. You know, we're so guilty about what happened yesterday. We didn't do this. We didn't do that. We're so worried about tomorrow. Do we have enough things on the list? We can't just rest and know the peace of God. We need to learn to wait in this hurry-sick world. Isaiah 40, 31. I'll just read that quickly. Isaiah 40, 31. But they that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings as eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk, not be faint. Now, if you look at this verse, a lot of people take, all right, eagles, run, don't be weary, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. People just blow by the first part of it there, which was wait. We need to be patient. We need to be wait upon the Lord. If we're trying to hurry things and fill our schedules too many things that we feel we need, instead of backing off, having less, getting a prayer life, and letting God answer those questions, we have a hurry sickness. Prayer is the key that I need to key on in our my family, as head of the household. We need to have a prayer time, and not only do we need to pray, but we also need to listen. We also need to have some calm silence, some meditation. What we've done now Sunday mornings to try to ease things into it when we get up so we can make morning meeting without a problem. What I'm telling the girls is to prepare your hearts and minds for worship service. That doesn't mean a lot of horseplay. That doesn't mean a lot of complaining. That doesn't mean a lot of finding out what we're going to do after we get home from the meeting. Just sitting quiet, understanding. I would like to add some scripture into that. We're getting there. One thing at a time. But just to have it quiet and to have the kids semi-focused. It's a trick. Switching gears. See, that gear we didn't switch till late. We had very busy Sunday mornings before we came to worship service. Until I finally realized, this is not good. I switched gears. I put the clutch in, I switched the gear, and now we're not going to have anything on in the morning. TVs, computers, this, that, the other thing. We're not going to start any games. Certainly not going to go down the trampoline and jump. Stuff happens in the morning. Not going to happen. I had to switch gears. I had a hurry sick world. Calm us down. As I embark on this journey, from our perspective, I'm going to start out real small. The two things I want to do, and Lori knows about these, number one is our prayer time and devotion. That's number one. Second thing I want to do is try to calm down Christmas. All right, yeah, try to tame that beast. Lots of luck. Lori will tell you, I don't mind Christmas. But, you know, let's face it, guys, people, folks, my fellow Christians. We're standing in line at Walmart with our charge card and 87 items that are complaining about the commercialism of Christmas. It happens to all of us. The lady who cuts our family's hair, talking about Christmas back in November, her name is Kim. And so, you know, we strike up the usual baloney, you're ready for Christmas, all that kind of stuff. And she said, yeah, I'm ready. I said, okay. I don't really care, but that's fine. She said, you know how I got ready? Oh, wow. I was expecting, you know, I caught this sale here and I caught this sale here. She says, we're not giving gifts anymore this year. We're not going to buy a $5 gift for all 86 relatives that we have. I said, oh, that's interesting. Now you got my attention. She said, no, what we're going to do is we're going to take that money and we're going to donate it to her. She's of the Catholic faith, so there's plenty of outlets, but we have plenty of outlets to give the money to someone who the kids couldn't have a Christmas. And I'm not advocating no toys for the kids and all that. Don't get me wrong here. All right. But what she was doing is taking that money and giving it to a family that had nothing. And then to make it special, she was going to give a little card to each one of those relatives that said, I just gave your gift to that family. You ought to feel good for yourself. And thank you. How innovative. That's a challenge. We don't need any more stuff. Let's face it. We just don't need it. What awoke my eyes is also when we sent that stuff to Poland. Now, there was a real awakening. Because as opposed to, all right, let's say we don't want to pay the shipping charge, so just get everybody together, give all the money to Ray, and he can write a check. Of course, it wouldn't have meant a hill of beans. Because they don't have any place to spend it. How interesting. This Christmas is very enlightening, not only talking to Kim, but also the way that our packages went out. I was talking to the gentleman who picked them up there at our house, so he picked them up for there. They have nothing over there. Nothing. Maybe that's the way that I can simplify our hurried lifestyle. Instead of going crazy at Christmas, not only spending the money, but just being just so busy, they can't do the things that we want to do. And what the family thinks? I don't care. I really don't. Because for me, and I'm not trying to be mean, but for me, I have to take care of my family, and I have to set an example for my girls. And one of the ways that we have to do it is to practice what we preach. And if we continue down this road, I don't want the kids to end up spoiled rotten. If they do, I have no one to blame but myself. When we did give those gifts out to, we sent them to a little girl that didn't have a gift. I don't know exactly how they went with the Sunday school. Lori told Michaela, well, we're sending this gift to this little girl because she's never had a present before. She was, 5-year-old was flabbergasted at that. Can you imagine that? Maybe an adult, yeah. For a 5-year-old, obviously she's got enough stuff. And she couldn't imagine not having a gift. And that girl was basically the same age. That woke me up. We're too hurried about worrying about the Christmas presents and this and that to really make a difference. And the last thing is say no when you mean no. Thinking, you know, if you say no to something that you can't do, it's not like that time is then taken away from you. If you say no to do this, then maybe God could say, aha, there's a block of time that Daryl finally opened up. I'm going to do something for him. I want him to do this. I want him to do that. It opens up an opportunity for God to maybe direct me in some of the things that I should be doing. If I shut him out with my hurry sick world, how's he going to work other than to have one of those slaps in the face that get you going? I need to give God more opportunities by saying no to more things that come along. And of course, the last thing is that he's going to be a background person. The Bible gives us a lot of different gifts. We don't always have to be the lead horse in the merry-go-round. Because you know where the lead horse in the merry-go-round goes? Round and round with the other ones. We don't need to be on the head rat in the rat race. It's not going anywhere either. Just be in the background and commit to a few things. I had a discussion with someone, man, who goes to our assembly here. We had a discussion a couple weeks ago. We came to the conclusion that we need to commit to a few things and do it faithfully, not commit to everything and try but fail in many things. It was a perspective that was long overdue for me to see. In closing, you know, when Judgment Day comes and we have to give an account of what we do, how we spend our time, I don't want to be told before I'm ushered into heaven, I don't want to be told, you know, Daryl, good job at climbing to the top of that ladder. The trouble is you had the ladder on the wrong building. I don't want to be told that. If I only get halfway up the ladder but I'm on the right building, I'll take that instead. That's the situation in our in our house. That's what we're trying to do. That's what we as a young Christian family are struggling with. I would certainly relish your prayers for this. If anybody's got circumstances that are similar, has figured out better ways, I am open. How to get rid of my hurry sickness and my crushed world, get down to the things of the God. That's what I'm looking for. Let's close in prayer.